never been more ready. Mm. Like, this is the most ready you've ever been. This and right
probably
here.
Probably my whole life.
You know what? I believe you.
I'm telling you.
I believe you.
I'm feeling good. I took a nap.
Oh man. You are really up in your game for Barbara.
It's because I'm trying to impress her.
She's already read your stuff. You don't need to impress her.
True.
Yeah, Jackie, we need to impress her.
She's done with ours, too. She's done with ours, too.
Oh, all right. All right, so fuck it. We don't have to impress anybody.
Hey, yo.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the weekly wind down. We are very excited tonight to be joined by Barbara Ann Wright, who, as I'm sure you picked up on, is Aaron Zach's editor and recently edited for Gene and I for Spellbound. And since you guys send in listener questions, you're also aware she writes her own books as well. So, Stacy and Stacy are not joining us this evening. One has a work engagement and the other is at a football game, and you'd be very surprised to find out. Hi, Kai.
Hi.
That's sweet baby angel, Kai. we're going to go ahead and get started. I am drinking. I'm totally cheating again. I have an excuse. I was in a car for 40 hours over the last 4 days. So I'm drinking 19 Crimes because it's what I happen to bring in my cooler with me. Yeah, I had a cooler of wine that I brought with me. So I'm drinking 19 Crimes again because I couldn't get to the store before that. So
sweet. We're going to introduce ourselves?
Oh, yeah. Man, not been doing this for a while? I feel like.
Right? It's been 2 weeks, I feel.
Jackie, right? you have massive car hangover.
I totally do.
Told this was a professional show.
That's what you were told.
That was a lie. I don't know who you were listening to, but same people that say they get their news from us. That's a mistake.
Your publicist lied to you.
I am Jackie D, the literary lesbian.
I'm Jean, the feisty feminist.
I'm Erin, the geeky gal pal.
And I'm Barbara, and I'm a guest, so I can do whatever I want.
Yes, yeah! That's completely accurate. Yeah. So, like I said, drinking 19 Crimes.
Jean, you're up.
Oh, me. All right. I am drinking the original Dark Horse Big Red Blend. Red blends are always a favorite of mine, and I kind of like the Dark Horse idea because I think that's me.
Oh,
that's me. I think the Dark Horse is my spirit animal.
Okay.
I agree with that.
I am drinking Zubrokra. It's a Poland.
No, wait, one more time.
No. I'm not saying it again. I'm not. Stop. You can't make me. Zubrokra. It's a Poland vodka.
Well, there goes our chances of ever being sponsored by them, is all I'm saying.
It could happen. You never know. I'm Polish, so they might be like, this is my sister. But yeah, it's actually really good. It's bison grass flavored. I know that sounds really odd, but it does have like an earthy hint to
okay.
it.
Okay, what is the difference between bison grass and regular grass?
I'm sure buffalo shit on it.
Delicious.
Yeah, and it actually has a bison grass in it.
Okay,
well, like it's in the bottles.
I think you just got dirty vodka.
I got buffalo shit vodka here.
Someone just like dropped a barrel and they're like, "Fuck it, put."
I'm gonna just call it buffalo shit vodka from now on.
Yeah,
and we'll see if it gets me buffalo shitty by the end.
Well, you know that there's that very expensive coffee that's like made with cat shit.
Ugh.
So there you go. I mean, it's clearly a trend.
There's another sponsor we just lost.
We don't want them anyway.
Not if they're making their products with shit.
I think it's like batshit coffee, and I think it's like $60 a cup or something insane like that.
Does it make you crazy?
You should write them and say that batshit is called guano.
Yeah.
So therefore, they're wrong, and they need an editor.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Hey-o.
Yes. Stepping up her game.
Guano.
That reminds me of Ace Ventura, the pet detective.
What are you drinking, Barbara?
I don't know.
I'm very jealous of all of your alcohol because I started antibiotics today.
Oh, no.
So I am drinking this lovely 2019 vintage Dr. Pepper.
Oh, it's a good year. It was a good year.
All right. Barbara's automatically in charge if she's not drinking.
You are now the cat herder.
You're the cat herder for the night. Yep.
Oh, plan to fail.
So, Barbara, what were you saying, Aaron?
I was talking stupidness. It's fine.
Carry Why don't on. You tell us about your newest work that's about that's coming out?
Okay, it's called Not Your Average Love Spell, and I would describe it as like fantasy comedy romance. A one reviewer called it light fantasy, which sounds like it's low on calories, but it's really not. It's incredibly fattening. It's four women who have to save the world if they can, A, keep their hands off each other, and B, not kill each other. So, yeah.
That sounds fun.
A little hate fucking going on in there?
Ooh. There is. There is. The two of the characters who really shouldn't be together hook up almost immediately and then realize they really shouldn't be together and have to go off and sort of find the women they're meant to be with.
So many people I know's life story.
Yeah. Sounds good already.
Well, yeah, and just like in real life, they have to be friends in the end. So, yeah.
The lesbian dating pool is very shallow and very small. It's a puddle. It's not even a pool. It's a puddle.
It's like a wet spot. The L word with the chart is seriously the most accurate representation of lesbians in the world.
Yeah, we don't live in a world where you can get mad about someone sleeping with your ex. You're like, listen, the options are real limited.
So long.
Yeah. Well, I'm brand new to the dating pool in Austin, and even now I've met several people who are like, do I know you? And I'm like, yo, no, you do not.
Can I know you, Barb?
None of you know me. Nope, that wasn't me.
So we got a few listener questions for you. So Christy wants to know, what is your writing kryptonite?
Does that mean what stops me from writing, or?
I think it's open to interpretation, unless you want me to try and get her on the phone.
Oh, okay.
My answer. Hi, Christy.
I'm sure she'd like that.
Things that make it hard for me to write would be television,
mm-hmm.
Booze. Mm. Though I have done some really good writing on booze, I thought.
What'd your editor think?
My beta readers. It never got to her. I have another level.
Oh.
To get past, I have beta readers who read for me and are like, did you think this was funny? It's not funny. But mostly it is, it's almost like having a lot of time on your hands almost makes it harder to write because you're like, okay, I could write, but I've got, you know, hours stretching ahead of me, and there's a closet that really needs reorganizing, or we're all going to die.
Yep.
So I have to do that first to save us. So I would say that it's too much time and too many things to do.
Okay.
That's very accurate. Honestly, I can feel that.
I think that's why those two write at, like, different locations. Don't you write at Panera and Starbucks?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I got to get out of the house. Otherwise, I will have to save the world by cleaning and doing laundry.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Things you haven't done in weeks, all of a sudden you're like, well, I can't write this chapter.
It has to be done right now. Like, why am I not dusting? I should probably dust.
That's why I have a writing room.
That it's, you know, these reruns of Star Trek aren't going to watch themselves.
Right?
You know, they're depending on me.
Who's going to marathon Fleabag? Not me. So I better fucking do it.
They need ratings.
That's right.
Jean?
What's that?
You gonna ask the question?
Which one?
The next one.
Oh my God.
Megan wants to know. I didn't know we were doing this.
What do you mean? I explained.
Tell Megan that's not a question.
Wait, you gave me an explanation and I didn't read it?
Oh, what's happening?
Jean, No, I'm saying that is very likely. It's very likely that she gave me a full explanation and I just didn't read it. All right. Yeah. Here we go. Megan says, where, speaking of places to write, Barb, where is your favorite place to write?
Well, right now it's at my kitchen table because my back is to the television, but I can see that the dishes aren't washed. So I think I'm going to have to pick another spot. I really like going to libraries. My luck lately, though, I've been going on like toddler time or something. So it's not really, really quiet. they defeat even the noise canceling headphones.
Oh geez.
So yeah, I don't really have a favorite spot right now besides the kitchen.
Fair enough.
Close to the snacks.
And the alcohol.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey yo. My favorite place.
Well, right. Didn't Fitzgerald say to write drunk and edit sober?
Yes.
I think it was Fitzgerald who said that, and I have to say, I agree with that. Barb?
I'm going to try it the other way.
Okay.
I'm going to get my edits back in a bit. Great job, Erin.
Well, isn't yours the one where I just kept putting sex out in the margin?
Yes.
She told you to write more sex?
No, every time her characters were eye fucking each other, I would write sex out in the margin.
The end of it, there was like seven of them where I was like, she's like, maybe you should just like take out this eye fucking and just have them have sex already.
You're like, oh, okay.
Oh my god. I like a slow burn. I don't know what to tell. So the next question is from Claire. Have you always written, or was it something you found later in life?
I've always done it, but I think I was kind of a, not a stupid child, but one who didn't realize things very easily because I never thought you could do this for a living that other people would want to read it. So I was always making up little stories, but nobody ever said, you're going to be a writer. People always just like, what are you going to be when you grow up? And I'd be like, I don't know, you know, astronaut pony. So I've always been making up stories, and it wasn't until I was much older that somebody was like, you should try to get this published. And I just laughed because I was like, no one's going to want to read this. And then lo and behold, someone did. And I still can't quite believe it. I had a nightmare before my first book was published that it was actually blank.
What?
And that I'd fooled everyone this whole time, and that they were going to find out because tomorrow the book come out. And of course, there's nothing in it.
The real page turner.
Yeah. I don't think Bold Strokes would go for that one.
No, I prefer to think of it as easy to read. Yeah. Choose your own adventure.
So Sarah wants to know, which was your favorite and least favorite character that you've written?
Oh, let's see. My least favorite character that I've written. Good Lord, that's a hard one because I mean, if they weren't fun to write, I usually kill them pretty quickly.
See, I like writing the crazy ones.
No, I love the crazy ones. I like writing those, but the ones that's like, can you think of one you didn't like writing? It's like,
yeah,
maybe.
It's like, parents? what parent's going to admit that they have one fuck up kid?
Well, I was thinking maybe the family members in the stories that they have to be there, but they're not necessarily fun. They're more there to like either provide support for the main character or to move the story along. But you're like, oh God, you know, I'd rather they all just be orphans.
Do you think that's why so many like authors have like severed relationships with family members so they just don't have to write them like in their books?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's easier to just be like, I don't talk to my mom than be like, I called my mom to, yeah, no one wants to put that. Yeah.
Right.
No, well, I think so many people have contentious relationships with their own family that they're like, you know, you can usually tell if somebody's always has a shitty father character in every one of their books. You're like, I think maybe you're working some shit out here.
That's so funny because like I always have like a parent that's dead in my books. So I'm like, did I want a dead parent? Or like, what the hell's going on?
Well, you tend to write what you know, too.
Yeah, that is very true.
Yeah, you always have to start with what you know.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jane.
That's true.
Oh.
She just doesn't understand the
the dynamics. It's been a while.
This is my first author interview podcast.
Is it?
Oh,
it is.
Oh, well, get it together, Copeland. For fuck's sake, I'm not going to drag you along.
It's no excuse, but I'm going to use it.
Get together, Carol.
Oh, this was actually, I did like this question. Michelle wants to know, if you could rewrite one of your books, would you, and which one would it be?
I don't think I'd rewrite any of the ones that got published because they're perfect. Thank you. I really don't have that big of an ego, but I had to say that. I think I'd rewrite some that I wrote when I was learning and that I put in a drawer because I really liked the idea, but my talent at the time wasn't up to anything. And really, one of them where I really liked the characters, but I didn't have a story in mind, is just a succession of sex scenes and kidnappings. For like 200
I'm in.
Pages.
I'm in. And,
yeah, that was a NaNoWriMo book, and I would like to redo that one someday.
Hey, who knew Stockholm syndrome could be so hot, right?
Well, no, it's actually no sex between the kidnappers and the kidnappees. Just back home, we're planning to save this person who got kidnapped, but let's have sex.
Okay.
And then this person gets loose and somebody else gets kidnapped. And it really just is a.
So is there a genre that you don't write in that you would like to write in?
I would like to do like a hard-boiled mystery. I love to read them, but I've never been able to write one, with the alcoholic detective in the rain sort of thing.
Those are great though.
No, and I've never been able to do like a that deep of a mystery. It's always just sort of like, who is it? You know, who's the killer? Oh, Tim, you know, and then it's done.
That sounds like my current novel.
It's not a book.
Who's your favorite author to read?
Oh, I have so many favorite authors. Oh, my God.
Who's on your nightstand?
Right now?
Yeah.
Stephanie Barron, who does the Jane Austen mysteries. In my Kindle, I have every single author ever. I really like to read stuff that's not my genre while I'm writing my genre. So even though I love fantasy authors, I'm not currently reading any because I'm writing a fantasy. So like Ellis Peters, who does the medieval mysteries, lots of mystery writers.
So is Aaron your least favorite or favorite person to edit?
You can be honest. I'm
no, don't answer that. You'll give her a complex. She'll spiral.
None of you are my least favorite to edit. I love all my children.
That's exciting.
Actually, I don't call my authors my children. I call you my stable. My stable of authors.
We're all horses.
What have you found the most like challenging part of editing?
I guess trying to get across to the person that I'm talking to that I'm not mad at them, that I'm not angry, that none of my comma replacements is in any way a judgment, that we're all working together, you know, that I am with them on this journey and not just like going comma here, comma there, I hate you, you'll never do any good. There's none of that.
Barb, I enjoyed your sardonic remarks in terms of what we needed to fix in Spellbound.
Yeah,
I got
like
a kick
them.
Out of some of them. I was like laughing out loud at some of the things, the way that you phrased some of the things.
I hope that's the case with everybody. I try to do that. I try to be funny. And I know sometimes I can get sort of an inkling from emailing back and forth if somebody is very sensitive. And I try to be okay with, especially if they're like a brand new writer and I'm like, it's okay.
Who are you talking about?
I'll include like, I'll be like talking about some stuff. I'm like, okay, these are the things we need to work on. Don't worry. It's okay. Just breathe. Here's a picture of a bunny.
Aaron, you got those emails, didn't you?
I mean, honestly, I don't think so. I think
that was pretty good. No, you didn't. You were pretty good. It's the people who are like, okay, I think they're going to cry. So they need a picture of a duck wearing pants.
I mean, who doesn't need that? I mean, I'll still take that if you want to send that. I remember the first time you sent back edits for breaking down her walls, and I was like, I am the worst author in America.
You do like, that every time one of your books comes back. She texts Jean and I and goes, I'm the worst writer that's ever lived. And I'm like, you're 100% not.
There is the funniest remarks in it. Like you said, my favorite one was, it was like, she was as like a cat in a cat fight. You're like, what other kind of fight would a cat be in? And I'm like, good point. That was like literally one of my favorite things ever. Cause I was just like, I love her. Like, I love you. You're amazing. Like, you just make me laugh. So like, I didn't feel bad about my writing after I like started going through it. It's like when you see the amount of like comments and like insertions and all these things, I'm like, oh my fucking God. And then I'm like reading it, I'm like, oh, she's funny, I like her. She doesn't hate me.
I have edited for people before who don't really like to laugh at their stuff, and so you have to be very, very careful with those people. I think it was in one of your manuscripts, Aaron, when I said you sit talking about like pushing through a crowd of people. Mm-hmm. And I said, I didn't assume it was a crowd of harp seals. Don't beat up people. And I tried that with this other person and they were just like, I don't understand what you mean. Of course it's not.
Oh man.
And I was like, okay.
Ooh, oh, no. Can we guess who? No, I'm just kidding.
It was an independent contract, so I'm pretty sure it's no one.
No, I enjoyed those and I appreciated them. And if I ever work with you again, I will expect more.
Okay, good. Yeah, you will get more. Well, y'all are the ones. What did you use correctly? It was Vice. You used the correct spelling of Vice?
That was Jackie.
Loon.
Jackie used the Vice word.
I didn't know it was a thing that people don't use correctly.
Everyone spells it with a C.
Yeah.
Which is like Miami Vice. It's not the right way. But you actually used the S and it was like, oh my God.
Makes up for all my misplaced commas. So.
Jackie, I hate to say this, but Barbara didn't see a lot of your misplaced.
Well, that's
commas.
Because I was writing with you. You weren't there for elimination, Jean.
Gosh, that is hilarious.
Although my editor did say that I had improved greatly on my comma placement, but I just got elimination back from Cindy and I was like, I'm gonna open it and there's not gonna be any corrections. I was wrong. I was very wrong.
Nope. Cindy is also my editor and I'm also frequently wrong.
Oh man. It stings when you're wrong with Cindy. It stings. Because she,
go ahead, Barb.
I love having her as an editor. She does make me really laugh. She, one of my first books, she highlighted a whole page of my fantasy techno babble and just wrote what out in the margin. And I fell over laughing. And somebody else was like, that would have made me so upset. I'm like, oh, it's so funny.
I think it's hard to interpret sometimes, like, especially because this is the first book Jean and I, you edited for, I've never worked with you before. And my other editor, who's wonderful and sweet and fantastic, but she doesn't write like funny comments. So when I first saw yours, I was like, what's happening? Is she joking or is she like teasing us? I don't know what's going on. But then as I kept reading him, I was like, oh, okay, she's just funny. Like, it's not, she's not making fun of us. She's just funny. Because my other editor does not do that at all. Oh. So it was, and I've written 6 books with her. So seeing that one, I was like, and then Aaron was like, no, Barb's just funny. And I was like, okay, I can handle that. I just don't.
Well, I was the one giving advice. Like, I don't give advice. That's not my
Well, you do. We just
friendship.
Don't listen.
You were the one who wrote here. Somebody said, here we go again. And I wrote on our own, going down the only road. Yeah. I don't know.
That wasn't Spellbound.
Yeah. Fact.
That is hilarious.
Fact.
I remember that.
So if you could make a movie out of any of your books, which book would it be and who would you cast?
Can I do TV series instead
of
movies?
Listen, you can do whatever you want. You're the guest here.
Yeah, you can do whatever.
Take these off and go.
No, you can't do that. You can't
done with this unprofessional interview.
I would love for the Pyramid Waltz and its sequels to be a TV show. If you're listening, Netflix, I think it would make a fantastic show. It would just be so awesome. I would be scared if somebody like HBO wanted to make it, because then it'd just be like the Pyramid Boobs or the Boob Waltz or something. I don't know.
I tune in.
I mean, right? Nothing better than a boob waltz.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting paid. So. Right. And they probably let you come on set. So,
So who would you cast?
Hey. Oh, good Lord. I really don't know. I can never remember actors' names. I'm always like, you know that girl who was in that movie with the stuff?
Yeah, could you be any more vague?
Yeah, I really don't know who I would cast. I think I don't know enough young actresses. It's like the only ones I can think of are like my age or older.
That's okay.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Aaron writes age gaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jean writes older ladies.
She's like, yeah, she does.
Yes, it's a theme in your work. It's funny how I've gotten to know authors through the themes in their work.
It's not because I like older
she
women.
She has a type.
Yeah. I think you do.
I sure do.
You also think it's very erotic for women to drink out of bottles.
I do. I totally do. She's made a comment on that too. She was like, every book you've written has a glass pressed against lips. Uh-huh. I think you must like this. And I'm like, yeah.
Hey, I'll tell you what, because I've been in a car forever this week, and I was listening to Taylor Jenkins Reid's books. She definitely and I was listening to them like, I listen to 4 on my drive, so a lot of her work, and she has certain things that are in every single one, and you're like, oh, this is a thing you're into. Like, you dig this. Yeah, like, you find that, like, all of her leading men, the ones that are the good guys, she always says, like, I fell in love with his sincerity, and that is in every single one of them. So you're like, either someone was not sincere to you and you hate them, you're just making digs, or this is why you married your husband. Like, there's just certain things. I think authors do it unintentionally or maybe intentionally. Yeah. I don't know, that links all of their
subconsciously. Yeah.
Yeah. That links all of their stuff together.
I definitely do it intentionally. Sorry, Barbara, you go.
I used to read a paranormal romance author, and every time they'd have she had a male female pairing in her books, and she was straight. But ever something about them was like, the first time they'd get together, the man would always go down on the woman first. And then she'd talk about like how they did this and so, and they were sensitive, almost like a woman. And they did this and these almost feminine looks. And I was like, baby, I think you're concealing something.
Right, like, you might be gay.
You have something you want to share with the group?
Yeah.
It's There's funny though, you find those patterns.
You can write in.
I'm okay. Sure I have them and don't realize them.
Probably. I mean, everybody does.
We all do, I think.
Yeah.
One of the reasons, like, I think I write, because I'm the one being interviewed.
Always.
I'm a dick. the reason that I try to not write in the same tense, in the same, like, I like past tense and present tense and first person, third person. Like, I try to always, like, mix it up so I don't fall into patterns, and I still fall into patterns. It's just...
Another thing she does, she always, in the last 4 that I've read, she has a super strong, like, whatever the main character is going through, they have a best friend that tethers them to reality. Like, that is their backbone, that is their
he
everything.
Needs a best friend.
Taylor Jenkins Reid?
Yeah. She has
okay,
one
I was like,
that
me?
Is no, that is almost, like, just as good as the rest of the characters is... the best friend who's always kind of like, hey, get your shit together. Like, it's always a best friend that is brutally honest when it's absolutely necessary. And I was like, you know, I kind of hope everybody has that person in their life that is always, no matter what, is like, you need to reel your shit in because you're getting out of control.
Isn't that me?
Yes. We all need a Gene Copeland.
Yes, we do. We all need a Gene Copeland in our books and our lives. In The 7 Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, do you think it was Evelyn that was like the person that was like her straight shooter?
So that's like a juggernaut. Like it's so, it's such a, but I think Harry was that for her also.
Okay. For Evelyn.
For Evelyn. But okay. The Reed, she writes mostly straight books. Like that was kind of a, out of her norm. I really enjoy her writing style and stuff. And I don't typically read straight books where the main characters are straight, but I do like how she writes. So she didn't really have one as pronounced in Evelyn Hugo as she has in her other ones. But her main characters are always female. So it's always usually a female best friend. And I think in Seven Husbands, St. James was kind of one and Harry was kind of one. So it was hard to differentiate which.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about Trump saying he's going to build the wall in Colorado?
He is such a fucking idiot. Oh my God.
That was jokery or whatever he said.
Jokery.
Tomfoolery. Yeah.
Well, that's because they just decided to give New Mexico back to Mexico. And so if they do that, then Colorado will actually be on the border.
Yeah, well, then we can buy Iceland or Greenland or whatever the fuck. Right. And see, then we'll use the money from that to actually build something in Colorado.
But not windmills. Not no. The power windmills.
No, they give you cancer.
Yeah. And the sound is so loud. Yeah. He's such a dick.
What was your first thought, though, when you guys read that headline?
I was like, I'm not even shocked. Like, at this point, like, I'm not even fucking shocked. Like,
honestly, nothing shocks me anymore.
Yeah, nothing.
Nothing shocks me anymore. Especially because no matter what dumb fuckery that dribbles out of his mouth, it does not have any impact whatsoever on his supporters. It's like they have this force field around them that they do not comprehend what a dumb motherfucker he really is. And every time something comes out of his mouth that suggests that he should be in a home or at least medicated, these people, they don't perceive it that way. It's like, yeah, he says what's on his mind. We love him. Ugh.
We do need a wall in Colorado.
I think all those fucking pot smokers.
Yeah.
So people should send in pictures of like the dams across the Colorado River and be like, it's done. We've done it.
We've already done it.
Woo, good job, President Trump. Yeah. Nailed
Look
it.
How big it is.
Nailed it.
You know what? I think what was more shocking is, do you guys remember that text I sent you? It was like a screenshot of it's been 7 months since the last press conference. Like he has normalized this. Like this is an authoritarian move. This is what authoritarian leaders do. And he has normalized no press conference, no talking to the press. Like this is something that like until you like point it out to people, they actually don't realize that we haven't seen a press conference.
This is going on.
Right. Like it's just so shocking to me. That is more shocking to me than him opening his mouth and saying fucking dumb shit. Like I'm like shocked by the fact that this is really literally happening and we're all just so fucking blindsided by his ignorant fucking comments that we're not actually seeing the bigger picture. Sorry, Jackie. Go.
Oh, no. You have to look at the kind of play behind it though. It's not just that he doesn't want to have to get up and answer questions. His supporters aren't bothered by it because they see it as they have a direct line to the president's line of thought through his Twitter account. So they don't see it as missing out on a press conference because he has verbal diarrhea 30 times a day just out on Twitter where he's allowed to say whatever he wants without having to deal with the press. The entire reason the founding fathers, as flawed as they were, got the free press correctly was that people should be held accountable and have to answer questions on their policies and their statements. And he is just avoiding that altogether, which is what is truly undemocratic of it. And his supporters don't care because they don't feel like he should be questioned because they feel like whatever he says is the word of God. It's gospel. So that's...
And what's really disturbing is that any question about anything that he says is viewed as some sort of democratic attack, some sort of subversive plot against the Republicans and against him. And so nobody could even ask a question about the things that he says or does, because it's immediately viewed as some sort of subversive plot against him, that's what's really disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think about Twitter kind of coming out and saying, Twitter and Facebook? So it seems like they're trying to approach this whole, they're trying to say they're just platforms and they're not media producers, which we all know is categorically untrue, because yes, they are a platform. But when you pick and choose what's advertised on your platform, because they do accept paid advertisements, and what you are allowed to be promoted, you are now becoming a producer of media, whether you like it or not. It doesn't matter how you go about it or whatever. If we were to accept a sponsorship on this podcast, we would be essentially saying, we support the message of whatever this provider is saying, because we're taking money from them for airtime. So what do you guys think about the whole, these media platforms kind of saying, hey, we're not going to censor Trump because he's so powerful. He's the president. He doesn't need, we're not allowed to do that, because he's, whatever he says is so important, it shouldn't be censored. What do you think, Barbara?
I don't think anybody should censor him, because every time he talks, people can see what a dumb shit he is. And though that may never sway hardcore supporters, it might sway people who are on the fence. I don't know. And it gives the rest of us a good laugh.
Yeah. I
agree. People who are feeling so intimidated not to do it, I really don't know.
I feel like part of the, I obviously do not, I don't think he should be censored necessarily, because just like Barbara said, like, I truly think, like, it's kind of become comical, like his tweets and how stupid he is. And it's sad that we're at that, like, this is, here's just like a quick story. The other night I made Gail watch Air Force One with me. Right. Like, so this is the old school Harrison Ford movie.
You're digging deep into the video library.
I know. Deep. I was like, let's fucking watch this. She's like, I've never seen it. I'm like, I'm not surprised. So we're watching it, and like Harrison Ford, obviously, like in the movie, he's like ex like special ops, you know, and he's like a badass Harrison Ford. And he is like such a good, like, I'm like, I'd vote for you. Like, I would vote. I don't even know if he's a Republican, Democrat. I don't know. But like, my favorite part of the movie is that everything that he says, I cannot fucking imagine Trump saying or doing. Like, Trump hitting a terrorist. Can't imagine it. Like, I feel like he would be siding with terrorists. So like, all of that is like everything that happens in movies that like uphold our presidency, or anything, a president upholding our president. Like, I'm like, this is what America is to me, is like this idea that the president is definitely a leader, a person that I can look up to and be excited that they're punching a terrorist. Like Trump, on the other hand, I see his fucking tweets and I just laugh at him. I just fucking laugh. Like, in my mind, he has made the presidency something that fucking any person can do, because he can't. No, he cannot fucking do it. So like, in my mind, don't censor him. Make people realize that he is the, maybe one of the most idiotic people that has ever lived.
I would say the most.
Here's the problem, though, with, and I don't disagree with the premise of what you're saying, but you're also approaching it as a rational, well-evolved human being, whereas some of his dribble, I mean, was used in a manifesto as in a shooting in El Paso. So although we can look at what he's saying and be like, what an idiot, some people look at it and take it again as gospel, and they, I mean, look at what the situation we ran into, where they were trying to kill Clinton and Obama and all of these Democratic operatives because of the bullshit that was coming out of his mouth. And I'm not saying they, like, censorship is such a, so people are constantly like touting the First Amendment out, saying you can't violate First Amendment, you know, privileges, blah, blah, blah. The First Amendment only protects you from the government taking action against you. Twitter is a business. they can pick and choose who's on their platform, and they can decide what type of behavior is acceptable. So when they go out and they say, no, we're taking you down because you use the N-word, or, you know, you said burn all, you know, gay people, or whatever it is, they have these rules that the community is supposed to follow to participate in their platform. But when you have the leader of the free world consistently violating them and able to get his message out for free to millions of whack jobs who think, oh, okay, if he's saying that, you know, like that video, I don't know if you guys watched the video of that church shooting that he put up.
No, I wouldn't watch it. I just wouldn't watch it.
It was, so for people who wouldn't watch it, because it's trash, but it's essentially like a shooter killing, like, you know, the media outlets and, you know, Black Lives Matter and all this kind of stuff. But it's inciting the idea that this, a church shooting, like, he's promoting stuff like this. And you have a lot of unbalanced people that have access to Twitter. So while I do agree that you should be able to let people say what they want, and we can sit back and be like, good, I hope a million people see this and realize what a fucktard he is. It's also lighting a switch under some people who are living in a cave under their parents' house that are putting together their bombs and saying, who next, Mr. President? Who next?
Yep.
And that's what, and I don't have the right answer. I don't know who should be policing. Like, I'm not, is Twitter responsible for policing every one of the posts that all of these people, because then where do you draw the line? If the president can't make, like, where, I get it. I get their mindset about it.
Yeah.
I get absolutely. It.
Well, like, look at, like, not to bring this up, Gene, but, like, remember when you were in Twitter timeout because you posted that post? Like, you literally said nothing wrong, and they blocked you from posting for a limited amount of time. And then, so, yeah, Jackie, I get your point. Like, you're really onto something. Like, if he's posting things that are literally inciting, like, bad things to happen, like, maybe.
Well,
maybe
that's just not a theory that, no, like, I mean, El Paso shooter included his remarks. True. So that's, like, what worries me. It's not us balanced people who look at it and roll our eyes and go, this fucking idiot. Like, that, though,
well, that's like,
the four of us don't worry me.
Right. I mean, only when I'm drinking vodka. But, no, but, like, remember when we all took that, that quiz, right?
And it's, we're like, talking about podcast, yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
So, you know, next week, tune in for the exciting conclusion. But it's like you were like, blah, 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 this, this, and this. And I was just like, yeah, but, like, normal people that take the quiz that then, like, see, I should vote for Trump. That doesn't necessarily mean you should vote for Trump. Like, just because this quiz is saying this is who, what your things align with, doesn't necessarily mean that he's the best candidate to move that forward. He has his own fucking agenda. And even though he has policies he runs on, he doesn't give a fuck about those policies. He has his agenda. His agenda is himself. Himself. Like, the end, himself. And, like, it's sad when people, like, some Joe Schmo who has no fucking idea, who's like, I don't know who I should vote for. I'm just going to take this quiz. And, oh, I should vote for Trump, and I'm going to do it. And it's like, I don't know. This is the last 30 minutes, right? Because I'm feeling it.
We can tell.
I know. When I start going on, this is it. This is what's happening.
Well, I think that we're, you know, if you look at the history of the world, not just the United States, but the world, but as a society, we always kind of struggle when these major changes happen, right? Like, the Industrial Revolution changed how we looked at the world. When the car came along, it changed everything. Getting rid of slavery changed how we had to talk about and worry about creating cotton and the labor force and machinery, like, Reconstruction period. So we're in this kind of, like, technological advancement stage where we're trying to kind of figure out what should be allowed, what shouldn't be allowed, like, where are the guardrails? And I think that when you have a situation where these people have free platforms and are able to access this kind of, I mean, think about how different the world would be if at the time we were trying to abolish slavery, there was social media.
Oh my God, can you imagine?
I mean, we all collectively agree now, well, 90% of the population, 95% of the population agrees now that slavery was bad. We shouldn't have enslaved people. Like, that was a horrible thing that we did. But if we'd had social media and the ability to spin it, I mean, look at what we're doing now and even the prison system. That's slavery in there too. These people are working for pennies on the dollar in forced labor procedures and practices. And I mean, yes, I understand there's nuance in it because they violated laws and stuff, but we could get into an entire debate on should someone be spending 50 years in prison for an eighth of weed. Like, we could get into those type of arguments, but if people who were pro-slavery had the platform that we have now, I just think we're in an interesting period of time where I don't know if someone like Trump should have unbridled access to the masses where he doesn't have to respond to intelligent questions. That's my issue.
He shouldn't. And nobody in the Republican Party is stepping up and saying, no, he shouldn't. He should not have the capability to tweet all these outrageous claims, all these lies, all these fucking things that just aren't even part of everyday reality without being questioned on them. I mean, it's totally, you know, Aaron's point that she brought up earlier is it's totally relevant that it's no coincidence that he continues to tweet fucking 20 times a day, but there are no press briefings anymore where actual members of the free press get to ask questions and demand answers. We have totally moved toward totalitarianism by losing that, and nobody gives a fuck.
Well, he's essentially created his own media outlet. Like, well, and that
Facebook
is what he's
already done. Facebook has already stated when it comes to political ads, they're not going to fact check them. So, you know, Mitch McConnell could get up there and say that Amy McGrath shot and killed 50 white people while she was in Afghanistan without ever being prosecuted for it. I'm not saying Mitch McConnell would say that. I'm giving an example. But the four of us would be like, that can't be right. Let me Google it and see if anybody else reported on that.
Right.
But the idiots who follow this dotard are just going to be like, share.
Right.
And spread the bullshit because Facebook has already said, we're not going to police that. You can lie about your own political actions. You can lie about others' political actions. We don't care as long as you're paying for our advertising service. So, you know, Uncle Mike or Uncle John or whoever it is can post whatever they want, and they're sharing it with all their other idiot friends who don't believe it, who are now on this rampage thinking that Amy McGrath probably needs to be pulled out into the street and shot, ignoring the fact that she was a Marine. Like, there's just, I struggle with the what's the right thing that we should do at this point because we're in such uncharted territory, and the platforms that allow access to this information have kind of been like, figure it out.
My uncle this morning was reading me this thing, this email that he was forward about how Christians need to take back the United States of America. And exactly. And like,
email 2005 call.
Well, it's because it's from a bunch of old balls.
Forward it, 19 white children will be killed.
If you don't forward this, we'll never get back to the United States of America. Christians will all die in the end, yada, yada, yada. I had the lobster bisque. And I literally, like, I'm sitting there listening to you read this, and I'm like, you're reading it out loud. Like, it is resonated enough with you that you are reading it out loud.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there going, and it said something about how Obama took away National Prayer Day. So I'm like, I'm pretty sure that didn't happen. So while he's reading it, I'm literally Googling it, and it says, Obama did not fucking take away National Prayer Day. It's not, he did not. He basically just said, all religions can pray on prayer day. That's it. And like, after my uncle had finished reading, I said, okay, so first of all, I hope to God you didn't forward that to anybody. And he said, well, I did. I forwarded it to my cousin, Jeffrey, who is very much a Democrat. So Jeffrey like sat him down and like gave him all the, you know, basically told him to shut the fuck up. And I was like,
and you
God.
Know, when he sent it to, he's like, this is really going to get him. And Jeffrey's like, no, dude, just Google it.
I turned my phone around and I showed it to him. I'm like, just so you know, like Obama never fucking did that. And I think to myself, okay, so we censor social media, right? Yeah, great. But then we still have these old men, these old white men forwarding emails that say like all this fucking, I'm like, oh my God.
But the good news is that most of us don't even read those emails anymore.
Yeah, I mean,
when you see forward in your subject line, you just go, right. No, I'm not doing all that. Yeah.
I just was so taken back by the whole thing. Cause you know, he was like invested. Like he was,
well, it's really, so as soon as your brain also sees something that says, ding, ding, this falls in line with what you already believe, you automatically, so your brain is wired to take shortcuts. Like most of us, if we want to actually research something and think about it, especially if it falls outside of our, I already believe in this, you have to be like, no, I need to read more about this. Because as soon as our brain sees something that already aligns with what we believe, we immediately go to, this must be correct and accurate because it makes me look like I'm right. Like that's just a shortcut we take. Hey, a lot of people fall for it on that Occupy Democrats website too. Things fall in line with their political beliefs and it's not necessarily always true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does it do as much damage as like something like this? No, of course not. But our brains do that. You want to believe it so you don't bother researching it. And I'm not saying Facebook and Twitter are like responsible for people's laziness and inability to Google something, because like we talked about when someone said, oh, look, Los Angeles is the same population of these 45 states and they're going to, it's like, no, you dick. Like all you have to do a quick Google search and you will see that that's not true. Like it's very easy. So I understand why Facebook and Twitter, like, we can't be responsible for fact-checking all this stuff. Like, you guys have to take some personal responsibility, and I don't disagree with that. But when it comes to the president of the United States being able to say false things, or any of our elective representatives being able to say false things, I don't expect them to say to my uncle, that's not true, you can't do it. But they should say to Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump. That I guess that's my, like, we have to have some guardrails. We have to.
Anybody running for a political office.
For sure. Absolutely.
Said about Los Angeles being, you know, the population of 48 different states. Like, that was shared by a person running for the House.
I know, and like, they shouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, they shouldn't. You're absolutely right. Yes, you're absolutely right. It'd be like, I don't know, someone important saying something crazy.
Like the president of the United States? Is that important?
Zubrowska! Zubrowska! All right.
Zubrowska. It's that it's that bison grass you got going through your system right now.
It's that buffalo shit she's drinking.
Buffalo shit! All right.
All right. What's everyone obsessed with this week? We'll start with you, Jean.
Oh my God. I just saw that tonight the fucking Hallmark Network is starting Christmas movies tonight. Jesus H. Christ, we haven't even fucking celebrated Halloween yet. And you're putting Christmas movies on? Oh, God, that fucking grinds my
gears. You don't have to watch it.
I know, but I will. No, I won't. Because you know why? Because they're all fucking 30-year-old heterosexual couples. And all the guys are named Nick, and all the girls are named Holly. So no, I will not be watching any of these fucking movies.
So these were supposed to be bad obsessions, because I misunderstood.
No. That's just Jean.
You're obsessed with. Jean just happens to be obsessed with something negative this week.
Barb, I'm just an angry old dyke, so you don't count on me being obsessed with something negative.
You can be whatever you want to be. I support you.
That's right. You know what's so funny, though, is all of these movies are just going to spur on ideas. So you just got to just sit down. Your next bestseller could be in one of those movies.
I categorically refuse to watch that drivel, that rubbish.
Rubbish.
It's rubbish.
Aaron, what are you obsessed with?
So I am obsessed with Fleabag. I've been marathoning it, and I love it. Phoebe Waller, what's her last name? I don't know, but she's amazing.
Erin always comes prepared for our podcast.
Bridge, Phoebe Waller-Bridge. So she's so good. Like, so she is like, she was like the mastermind behind, you know, Killing Eve becoming a series in the beginning, and she produced it. And I want to say she I don't think she wrote any of it, but she was very much involved in the production of it. And so I obviously knew her from then, but then Fleabag came out on Amazon, and I never watched it because I was like, I don't know if I want to get into, you know, another show. So I started. No,
I gotta can't really commit. That's the same. Do you want to get into another flavor of cupcakes? Of course you do.
I don't know. I don't. I really like vanilla. I'm just a vanilla girl.
Okay. Well, we'll be diagnosing that later. In after hours.
But to tell you what, yeah, I mean, right? Like, we should really do weekly wind down
after hours. Dark. No, we shouldn't.
We shouldn't. So anyways, yeah, like, so there's, okay, so have any of you guys watched it?
No, Barbara.
So Fleabag, so she is basically just like a sex addict that has issues. Like, she just has issues, and her issues stem from obviously her childhood, but the way that she cuts away, so like, she'll be in the scene and then she'll look at the camera and she'll drop like a one-liner, and it is so hysterical. Like, I just love it because
hysterical.
Hysterical. It's literally my life. Like, I'm always like, you know, in my head, like, I'll say something and I'll just be like, but on top, you know, like, and I just, and she does it, and it works so flawlessly. It's so, so good. And then in this season, in the second season, like, she is like the guy that she's like interested in, like, can see that she's doing this, like, can sense that she's like taking a minute to like, or like taking like 2 seconds to like have this conversation in her head. And it's just so funny. It's just good. It's good. But it's deep too. It's not like, in the beginning I was like, well, this is really gratuitous and I love it. But now it's like deep, and I'm very invested to see what happens with her. I'm very obsessed with it.
Barbara, no shit, what are you right? obsessed with?
right now, I'm watching a lot of the Great British Baking Show. The Bake Off baking show thing. Just because I find it, Erin is dying. Is she dying? Is she dead?
Sorry. She's hacking herself into unconsciousness.
Okay.
Did I get it out? Did I mute it?
It's hard to say.
Yes, you did.
It's the bison poop. So I find it, anything that's very soothing like that, I like, even though the show is very tense and everyone is so nice and British. And I just like to compare it to some American reality TV shows where people are scheming and trying to get each other thrown off. And I just wonder what it'd be like if they got stuck in that tent.
They should do America versus British Bake Off. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been sick a lot recently and staying up and watching old reruns of that or the current shows, and I think I'm a fan forever.
I've never watched that. I really want to.
You should.
I know, like, Aurora watches it all the time, Aurora Ray, and I'm like, I need to watch this. Like, this is probably pretty funny.
So I'm finally in California, and yeah, it was a long drive. But what I'm obsessed with this week, I was waiting for to listen to the Testaments, the sequel to The Handmaid's Tale. I've had it pre-ordered for like 6 months. our listeners know that The Handmaid's Tale is my hands down, like, all-time favorite book, like, overall encompassing. And so I was kind of nervous to listen to The Testaments, because when you have your most favorite book or movie or whatever it is, and then someone produces a sequel, you're very scared that it's not going to be what you hope it is. And it absolutely was everything that I hoped it would be, and then some. Margaret Atwood, Erin and I were talking about this earlier this week, is probably the greatest author of our generation and probably several other generations. And it was, so what it essentially did, it took three different stories. It takes place several years after Offred kind of escapes Gilead, and we're going by the book, not the TV show. And so The Testaments is about three different storylines that have now kind of evolved since then. And it's Aunt Lydia is one of them. And then two female children, one that grew up in Gilead and then baby Nicole, who actually escaped Gilead. So it's her, one of the other children, and then Aunt Lydia. And it started out a little slow and I was like, oh God, come on, Atwood. I know you got it in you. And it was so worth it. And it brings you so much satisfaction at the end. And I just can't, it was everything I hoped it would be. So I can't even recommend it enough. Yeah.
Are you glad you did it on audiobook?
I'm going to read it also. Like I want to buy the actual book version of it as well. Because like I've read The Handmaid's Tale probably close to 20 times throughout my life for different reasons and different, you know, I am, because the voice of Aunt Lydia is actually voiced by the woman in the show who plays Aunt Lydia.
And
And then the two girls who did it, one is, I don't know if anyone watched Parenthood. It was the eldest. Their inflection, they're both actresses. So their inflections and the words were kind of perfect. And whenever someone is really good at character acting, to have that kind of voice and support behind the emotions and stuff that are taking place, I'm glad I listened to it. I will still read it to get kind of my own interpretation of it, but it was, oh God, it was so good. I just can't, if you enjoy The Handmaid's Tale, like you have to read The Testaments. It was fantastic. And then of course, then I fell into a Taylor Jenkins Reid hole, and it's been a whole thing. And now I'm like, so Taylor Jenkins Reid, she has a mind, all of her books, none of her characters are groundbreaking. None of them are like and I'm keeping Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo out of this. I'm keeping it out of this.
Groundbreaking.
Okay. In her other books, none of them are groundbreaking, but her approach to storytelling is not like anything you've ever read. She takes very traditional storylines that you're like, okay, yeah, we've seen this 100 times, and does it completely differently, like completely different. And so it made the time go by a lot faster. So I had a good drive. And I'm finally back home in California. 40
fucking hours in a car.
Yeah, I did 12 hours the first 3 days and then 7 today. Yeah.
That's a long fucking drive.
It's been a long drive.
I wasn't even fucking complaining about 3.5 hours to P-Town.
And Aaron could have come with me, but
I could have.
Here I sit alone.
You know what? I mean, Jesus.
Alone.
You feel bad? I mean, you really are alone because, like, no one's even there with you.
I don't know where anyone is right now.
There's this cat that's gone by several times.
Well, yeah. And a cat just wanders around. Yeah. There's nothing you can do about it.
I love that Barbara spotted the cat. She's like, there's a cat.
I'm most interested in animals. Yeah. So whenever I see one, I saw the dog behind you too earlier.
Yeah. I noticed the kid going by a few times too.
Oh, they're all at the game. Well, I think Stacy's actually here somewhere. I don't know where she is.
Oh, it was Stacy then, not the kid.
How's everyone's, everyone's alcohol seems like it's good. And your Dr. Pepper.
Yes, it is. It's exquisite.
Is it fruity? Is it?
I bet it gives
oaky or buttery.
Cola. Really good belches. I would say it's the main cola aspect.
I mean, I think it's good that they were able to capture that.
Yes, I think so.
Well, that's it for us this week, everyone. Have a good weekend, and we will catch you. Looks like Jean's. I always know Jean's going to say something because she leans in the mic. No. What, you got something to say?
No, I wasn't going to say anything. I'm just leaning forward, stretching my sciatic nerve.
You know what? When I was driving through here, I went through Nebraska and Wyoming and Utah that nobody cares about. And I should have stopped in Wyoming and the Dakotas to find out why that's the... We have listeners in over 30 countries in every state except for Wyoming and North Dakota. Why won't you listen to us?
Should have. Well, we know how they feel about gays in Wyoming. My God.
Jackson's whole...
Jackson. Yeah, they fucking beat up.
Come on.
You're gay. You're Jackson Hole.
I can't quit you.
Have a good weekend, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.